It is time to talk Dictionary of Sydney. Nicole Carmer joins me for a good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you have got, and I just, this is the best title for a story I think I've ever heard, The Mad Dentist of Wynyard Square.
Yeah, I mean, you can just imagine, the papers of the time, the 1860s, were going nuts and having such a great time with the story. And I'm just so happy to be here today, not talking about the US elections.
It is very nice. We're giving everyone a lovely break. You are getting a break right now from the US elections.
It's the elections that shall not be named or mentioned. We're talking about Henry Bertrand. So that's his name. He was the Mad Dentist of Wynyard Square. I suppose we need to start in 1840 in Mayfair in London, which is where he was born.
Mm-hmm.
And his family name was actually Lipschutz. So he was a Jewish extraction. And the men in his family were all dentists. So, of course, he entered
dentistry school.
Dentistry.
Of course.
And began his career in London and then practiced in Belgium before he came to Sydney in 1860. Now, I love this because he advertised his services in the Sydney Morning Herald, announcing himself at the ripe old age of 19, I might add.
Oh, Lord.
19 years old.
Lord.
As the surgeon dentist to the Imperial Court of France.
That's a... Was that accurate?
No.
Oh, good. Good.
But, you know, nothing like a good kind of royal decree type thing or royal endorsement. And, you know, he could be found at 28 Wynyard Square between 10 and 4 o'clock. So that's how he advertised himself. So obviously had his offices at Wynyard Square. So that's where the Wynyard Square comes from.
Yes.
Now, 2 years later, he married a woman called Jane King, and they had two children together. But when his youngest was about, I think, 5 months old, he began an affair with a woman called Ellen Kinder. And she was the wife of a businessman called Henry Kinder, so another Henry, which is very confusing. But now, it was just a few months after that affair that Bertrand just decided that he was going to kill Kinder.
Of course.
As you do.
Sure.
Yeah. So late in the evening of the 2nd of October 1865, a doctor was called to treat a gunshot wound to Kinder's head. Now, the story goes, Bertrand was present with his wife, Jane.
Right.
And their story was that Kinder had been in a drunken state when he held the pistol to his head in front of Bertrand and his wife and pulled the trigger. Now, Kinder took 4 days to die. So it was one of those
horrible
situations. You could just imagine how horrendous that would have been. Now, 2 months later, I think there was a tip and police exhumed his body and found poison in his stomach.
Gasp.
The plot thickens.
Yeah, this is great.
Now, Henry and Jane Bertrand were charged with murder whilst Ellen Kinder was charged with being an accessory. Now, it turns out Bertrand made several attempts to kill Kinder before succeeding. And the Sydney Morning Herald at one stage reported, on one occasion he attempted to purchase a pistol while disguising himself in his wife's clothing. So he was... Yeah.
that is an odd way to go about it.
Yes. And you think, why? Why would you do that? And... Yeah,
wow.
I mean, it also kind of attests to how, like, his mental state, I think, of the time. He was obviously
not doing well?
No, I wouldn't say so. So it was actually Bertrand's secret diary in the end. The old secret diary.
Why would you keep a record of this? This is amazing.
Which obviously wasn't so secret anymore.
Not at all.
Because it was found, along with evidence given by his sister, that sealed his conviction. And the case against Jane and Ellen actually collapsed in the end because of lack of evidence. They couldn't find some real evidence to convict them. Now, the trial detailed scandalous allegations. This is the 1860s, and this is just extraordinary, including one that Bertrand intimidated his wife into sharing their bed with Ellen.
Oh, Lord.
Yes.
This is 1860s?
This is 1860s in Sydney. Now, Bertrand was sentenced to death in February 1866, but his sentence was commuted. I don't know how that happened, to life in prison.
Mm.
Now, he spent his time in several jails, including the Parramatta Lunatic Asylum, but he spent the majority of his 29 years in prison in Darlinghurst Jail. And he... incidentally developed a talent for painting watercolours and bone carving. So he just he had a lot of time.
Occupied,
yeah, he had a lot of time on his hands.
Watercolors and bone carving.
And it's funny because I was thinking it's funny that he did that in Darlinghurst Jail, which eventually came the national became the National Art School, which is funny. And you know, one of his bone carvings is actually in the state collection of the State Library of New South Wales, and one of his watercolor paintings. So he they're actually quite good.
They're quite good, yeah. Aren't they? Right.
Now he. Spent. He was released in 1894, and he spent a night at the Metropole Hotel before being deported to England the next day. So he was just, yep, you're out of here. And he changed his name to Burton and practiced as a dentist until he died in Portsmouth at the age of 84.
Wow. So he went back to dentistry.
So he went back to dentistry and, of course, changed his name.
Yes, of course. Yes. The scandal would have gone overseas, surely.
Yes, it did. What an amazing story. The Mad Dentist of Wynyard Square.
Salacious? That's amazing.
Yes.
Where can people get more unbelievably rare stories like that?
DictionarySydney.org.
Thank you very much, Nicole.
Thank you.